Hello, Low Country. This is longtime ESPN commentator Dr. Jerry Punch inviting you to listen to the Scott Hamilton Show on 98.9 ESPN Charleston. It should be fun. After all, Scott has inside jokes with people he's never even met.
Been wanting to talk to him for some time. Fellow columnist, even though I no longer have that label. He's a columnist at the Boston Globe, and he's written a book titled Wish It Lasted Forever, Life with the Larry Bird Celtics. It's about those great Celtics teams of the 1980s. Dan Shaughnessy, welcome to the Scott Hamilton Show.
Nice to be here, Scott.
Dan, your book has fascinated me. It's captivated me, and those teams have captivated me for basically my entire adult life. But I've got to ask you this, man. You were around those teams for the large portion of that run during the 80s. Why did you sit on this idea for so long?
No, that's a good question. I mean, and it was nice to hear your intro there, telling the young fella how much I'm trying not to promote this book as the game was so much better then, and it's not that great now. But that is, in fact, the truth, and the truth hurts. Whatever, the game's okay now, but it was way better then, and that's just the way it is. When, like a lot of us, the pandemic kind of inspired a lot of things. And watching The Last Dance, when they showed that all that great '80s ball at the beginning of the pandemic, that kind of lit a fire under me. I kept seeing my young self sitting at courtside, and of course. In those days, the lowly media sat right next to the bench. We had this amazing access that's not coming back. And I know everybody knows who won, who's the stats, who's the Hall of Famers and all this. So this is not a play-by-play of the old games. This is like a look at what it was like when we could tell the fans what these guys were like and how interesting and fun they were, how secure in their own greatness they were. So this book just kind of goes back and has fun to this time when we were on the team. You know, not we didn't have the fame or the groupies or the glory or the money, but we were with them all the time. So we were on the buses, in the hotels, flying commercial, and again, sitting next to the bench and riding the bus to practice and all that stuff. And you had this group of characters, Bird, McHale, Parrish, DJ, Walton, that was just fascinating and great, secure in their greatness, and so much fun. So that's what the book's kind of a romp through that. You sound like a good target for it. I hope you enjoy it.
Dan, well, please expand on that. I, you know, 20 years as a print journalist, 7 years as a columnist, now I do radio, but please make it clear to my audience there's no such thing as media groupies.
No, this was just, you know, I was not a friend of theirs. And, you know, one of the chapter titles of this book is they call me Scoop. And Bird would say when I walked into the locker room, he'd say, Scoop, notice how quiet the room gets when you walk in here? I mean, the media was always running with me, and I was looking for stuff and writing the news. And if anybody misbehaved or got in trouble, that was going in the paper. On the other hand, just private stuff, like, you know, if you bump into guys, you're having beers after the game, that's okay. And as long as everybody's behaving and able to do their job the next day, people don't need to know that. So it was just a way, you know, if we're waiting for a flight to, you know, Indianapolis or something, and a lot of downtime, you could say to McHale, you want breakfast? And he'd always say yes because he wanted the free food. So you'd take McHale to breakfast, and he'd tell you some stories, and you'd have your off-day story. So it was like that. We were with him so much. This is how it is when you're in college or, I suppose, in the military, or you're just with people all the time, and you get to really know what they're like. And that can be good or bad, but there was no getting around that we were able to tell the fans what these guys were like.
Yeah, Dan, that's exactly right. My mentor told me this, and I've lived by this. Be friendly, but don't be friends.
Yeah.
Be friendly,
yeah,
but don't be
it.
Friends.
Yeah, that's it. I never made plans. Hey, where are we going to dinner tomorrow? It wasn't like that, but it was always kind of, you're just going to bump into people when you're staying in the same hotels and on the same airplanes and just all the downtime that you have in that circle. So I was not trusted. I was suspicious, and you know, there was a lot of back and forth, and the book's filled with a lot of that back and forth. And it's a world that I understand it's gone now. I mean, the moat has grown so wide, and today's reporters are not allowed to get near these guys. When you went to the COVID bubble, you had to sign a waiver saying you would not approach if you saw a guy away from the facility because that was their time. Well, that's where we did all of our work, was making the approach at the airport or in the hotel lobby or whatnot, because there was just so much of that downtime, and you were able to get a lot more work done on road trips than you were at home.
We're joined by Dan Shaughnessy. You can follow him on Twitter at Dan_Shaughnessy. And Dan, you mentioned the Last Dance and the Jordan Bulls and all that, and that was a Jordan vehicle. Jordan produced it.
Yeah.
It was to, you know, help perpetuate the myth of the great Jordan and all that. But I think if you did the same thing with the Celtics, if they had their own miniseries or whatever you want to call it, and they went with that kind of treatment, I can't say that it was the Larry Bird story. I mean, I know your book is titled Life with the Larry Bird Celtics, but that was a true team. I mean, Larry Bird was obviously the greatest player probably ever for the Celtics, but the Celtics were very different than the Bulls of the 90s. Would you like to expand on that?
Well, I mean, again, you had five Hall of Famers on the 85-86 team. I mean, Bill Walton was an MVP in the league. Dennis Johnson was MVP of the finals. Cedric Maxwell was MVP of the finals. Kevin McHale, you know, again, he's on that All-75 team, one of the great low-post players ever. So there was, you know, Robert Parrish has played more games than anybody in the history of the league to this day still. So there was this greatness all around it. And the coach, Casey Jones, is a Hall of Famer. And Red Auerbach, of course, the Hall of Famer, kind of putting the team together. And so, yeah, it wasn't a one-man show by any means. I mean, you know, Larry, there were moments when Larry just tell everybody to get the hell out of the way and he'd take over. But the passing on this team, you can find clips of the passing of the mid-'80s Celtics that just will take your breath away. And we don't have that anymore, the interior passing, low post passing, or doing stuff off the high post. I mean, it's just that's kind of the beauty of the game that I grew up loving and playing and watching, and, you know, the old pick and roll and the picket fence and the give and go and all that stuff. And it's beautiful to watch, and this team did a lot of it.
You know, when I watched Larry Bird, you know, I just was marveled by everything he could do. I mean, Larry Bird was not only a great shooter, but, yeah, to your point, one of the great passers of all time.
Yeah.
This generation doesn't realize that. And I don't want to be the get off my lawn guy.
I'll
but,
do that.
Well, you do that, Dan. If we parachuted Larry Bird into 2021, I swear to goodness, he probably averages 40 a game and maybe a double-double.
Well, yeah, the three-point, I mean, he only took two a game. I mean, he won the first three three-point contests that were ever held, and they were basically just to showcase his skill. And, you know, he's 6'9", farm boy strong, so that shot was not a push for him. That was range. And they just didn't take a lot then, because there was so much else to do with the offense, and they hadn't done the metrics with the three and the two and the percentages and all this sort of thing. But, yeah, you put him in the game today and you know, allow him to do that. I don't think he'd like it, because he liked the flow. He liked, he liked getting assists. He used to like to play in the Western Conference because he thought they were more liberal with the assists out there, you know, because of the magic factor, you know. So with the West Coast trip, he was always all about it because he knew he could rack up his assist title. And those were fun for him, you know, making free throws, you know, shooting 90%, 95%. That was fun for him. And he was a great rebounder. So, yeah, it's a combination of things. Those skills do translate into today because he wasn't big or fast. I mean, he wasn't fast or a leaper then, and he's certainly no more of that today. But he was able to go up against the pogo sticks, you know, Dominique Wilkins, James Worthy, those kind of guys, and be better than them.
How has Bird changed from when he first came into the league until now? I mean, and especially with your own personal interactions with him. Again, you guys aren't BFFs, but you've had a relationship with this man probably for nearly 40 years. How has he evolved with you, and overall, what's your take?
Well, there's really nothing with any of us anymore. Larry, we kind of knew he'd, you know, pick up his ball and go home when he was done with his game, and that was that. You know, when he was coaching and GM, and we could still get him and like that, but he's retired from all that now. But we saw it evolve as a player. You know, in college, he didn't do interviews his senior year at Indiana State, and he was very shy, he was very poor, and very suspicious of strangers. And I understood all that. I grew up in a small town, and we were almost the same age, and it took a while to get into any kind of trust with him. And he understood the relationship with reporters and players. And he basically came down to, hey, if it's true, go with it, you know, because I can live with what's true. Because there were things, you know, his father had killed himself, and he had a first marriage, didn't work out great. And, you know, he'd get in the bar room, dust up every now and then. I'd have to write about that, and he wouldn't talk to me for a few months. So, you know, there was always stuff going on like that. But deep down, you know, he got way better at it, and he was very blunt, and he would say things. You know, he'd call out the whole team when the Lakers smoked him, you know, like by 37 in game three of the finals, and said, we played like sissies, we played like girls, nobody's giving me the ball, we got to take somebody down, all this sort of thing. And that ended up leading to, of course, McHale taking down Kurt Rambis, changing the series, and the only time Larry was able to beat Magic in a championship was that year. But, yeah, he got better at the media thing as he went on, and a little more comfortable in our environment. But he was never going to be a lifer here. He's, you know, he's got his Southern Indiana, he's got Naples, Florida, he's got his family, and he's got his money, he's got the first dollar he ever made, so he's good.
We're joined by Dan Shaughnessy. And, Dan, we've discussed your time around these teams and your extensive coverage of the Boston Celtics, but when you write a book, I mean, that's a whole different breed of cat. You're going back and you're getting all your notes and you're recalling your own memories, but there's no doubt an extensive amount of research involved with this. And then you put it all together and you probably sit back and go, huh, I didn't realize that. Did you have a I didn't realize that moment when assembling this book?
A little bit. I mean, it was fun to go, you know, going back and getting in touch with the fellas and having them kind of plug in things from there. But I kept little journals and little scraps of things people would say in the course of our travels. And going back over those, you know, again, 35, 40-year-old date books and just, you know, seeing, you know, when Robert Parrish's wife tried to chew me out after they won the championship, and I just had all that stuff kind of captured in little frames here and there, and going back over and like, oh yeah, that happened, and like we went to the White House the day after they won. They won the championship on a Tuesday night, the Garden, and Game 7, and went to the White House the next morning at 10 a.m. on an Eastern shuttle. Well, that would never happen today. There's all kinds of controversy. Who's going, who's not going, and what's this and that. And then it was just, well, flight's at 10. See you there, boys. And you know, all these hungover guys piled on the plane. Some guys didn't go. It was no big story. It was just like Larry Bird said, President knows where to find me. He didn't go. He was too hungover.
We're joined by Dan Shaughnessy. And, Dan, I know you don't want to reveal too much about the book, but when you do all this research, you know, and you're investigating and you're learning more about this, what's the thing you're most proud of? What did you put into this book that you said you told this story like nobody else? Maybe particularly one particular vignette or whatever.
Well, it really is, Jeff. It's just things you forget. Like, I remember Larry had a free throw streak going. He used to go to the gym really early, old Boston Garden, shoot late in the afternoon, empty garden, pretty dark, cold. I was an early guy. I'd get there early, plug in my Stone Age computer. We were right at courtside next to the bench, and so he'd be out there shooting with one equipment guy rebounding for him, and I'd be setting up, and he always liked to break chops, so he'd come over sometimes and say, Scoop, what are you working on? Well, I said, well, you got a free throw streak going. You know, Calvin Murphy's got the record 88 in a row, and you're in the 60s, so I'm writing about that for the early edition of the paper. So don't screw me up and miss one tonight, because the story's going to look stupid in tomorrow's print if you miss tonight, because I'm writing about the streak. So he goes, I got you, Scoop. You know, that I just forgot about it, and then, of course, the first half, he gets fouled, goes to the line, he makes the first, he turns and winks at me before making the second one. Well, he hadn't forgot about the conversation. So, again, that stuff doesn't happen anymore. But it was like, and the fact that it happened then, that he actually still had this in his head while he's out there playing an NBA game. Just silly little things like that. There was always just kind of fun, silly little things like that, just little details that make, you know, kind of bring these guys off the page for you.
Larry Bird is thinking about Dan Shaughnessy while he's at the free throw line.
My deadline story. Didn't want to make me look bad. I got you, Scoop.
God bless Larry Bird. You know, how many people did you interview for this?
Well, I went back. I think I got like 13 of the old players, coaches, and whatnot. You know, I mean, the only, Robert Parrish and I don't speak, so that was off the table. And Larry's not talking to anybody. And then, of course, we lost Dennis Johnson, who I loved. In 2007, DJ had died. Everybody else are pretty, you know, Walton, McHale, you know, ML Carr, Maxwell, Dennis John. I mean, Quinn Buckner, you know, Jerry Henderson, a lot of good voices in there. And it was just good to reconnect with Rick Carlisle, he's still a coach in the league, and he was able to kind of put a voice to the whole then versus now, like that you started off this thing with. It's because he's active coach. He's won a championship as a coach, and he's on the 85-86 Celtics, which a team that went 50-1 at home. I mean, no one's going to do that again. And he was able to kind of put a voice to then versus now. And McHale has been current in the league as a coach and GM. And, you know, a lot of it for those guys is it's how they call the game. If they let us play by the rules we played by, we'd beat anybody now. But, of course, we'd probably all foul out in the first quarter the way they call it now.
You know, Walton was always one of the guys that fascinated me. I missed out on his prime.
Yeah.
You know, I really didn't get into basketball until his later years, and I remember him mainly as a backup for the Celtics, and I always thought, man, this is like one of the greatest players in, you know, at least college history, and here he is like the sixth or seventh man on this roster. But he always seemed so grateful for his time with the Celtics, even though he wasn't the man, he wasn't the star. Kind of tell us a little bit about Bill Walton.
Well, Bill Walton, Mr. Hyperbole. I mean, again, we're the same age, and, you know, when he's in college, you know, they win an 88 in a row at UCLA, and he and Kareem, you know, back-to-back, two greatest, you know, college players up until Leitner, just in terms of what they achieved and what they did. And I just, he was a mystical guy, comes to the NBA, he's MVP his second year, wins the championships, got the ponytail, you know, supposedly hiding Patty Hearst out there from the feds. And there was just all this mystery about him. And then when he came here, you know, he had this, you know, broken career of injuries and Clipper jail for 5 years and just miserable, and he got himself out of there and had this one gift, an 80-game season with the greatest team of all time. And he, if you bump into him, he'll gush for a half hour if you say Boston Celtics. And he told me, he said, Dan, you emptied the thesaurus when you write this book because you cannot overstate how great this was. And he's talking about the parking attendants and the toll takers on the Mass Pike and the people in Cambridge where he lived with his four boys and Larry Bird. And just he just gushes. I mean, Bill Walton's a gusher, hyperbole guy anyway. He's eaten a hamburger. He'll tell you this greatest hamburger he's ever seen, and that's just the way he is, but he really believes it. And the Celtics, he will tell you, the Celtics gave me my life back, and that's how he feels.
He gave you the title, right? Came from Bill Walton?
He did, yeah. It's a good passage there. It's part of the epilogue, and that, you know, how precious this time was, and I wish it lasted forever. And I'm like, you know, that's a pretty good title there. I'm going to go with that.
Our walk-off question for Dan Shaughnessy, you can follow him on Twitter at Dan_Shaughnessy, will be this. Did you ever go to a Grateful Dead concert with Bill Walton?
You know, they all went to Worcester. I did not. It was Bill's birthday, and there's a story in the book, too, that there was a stripper at practice that day. And Bill's wife had commissioned a stripper to come to practice on his birthday, and a couple of Dead members were at the practice, Phil Lesh and Weir, I think. Two of them were there, and it was a ridiculous day, and then Bill took the whole team out. I did not go. No, that was my bad. I went to Springsteen, and then there's a vignette, too, with McHale and Nils Lofgren and Larry trying to go to a Springsteen concert. We were in Houston. There's a lot of that nonsense in there.
But you were at the practice with the stripper, right?
I sure was. And the Mormons turned and they got the hell out of there. Danny Ainge and Greg Kite. Greg Kite said, "Whatever happened to birthday cakes? Get me out of here."
Danny Ainge. That is the one guy I couldn't stand. I couldn't stand that
Nobody
guy.
Nobody could. The other markets.
He's Dan Shaughnessy, columnist for the Boston Globe. He's written a fantastic book, Wish It Lasted Forever, Life with the Larry Bird Celtics. You can get it on Amazon, Books A Million, and just about anywhere you can purchase a book. And again, you can follow Dan on Twitter at Dan_Shaughnessy. Dan, it's been a blast, buddy. This is one of my highlights of my show. I've always enjoyed your work. You're one of the guys who inspired me to get into journalism.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, Scott. I hope you enjoy the book. Thank you.
All righty, brother. It's Dan Shaughnessy joining us on the Saitama Hotline.